And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 a.m. in the East Coast. 12 noon, I guess. It is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is March 6, 2017, and this is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we have Doug Newsom in the house and Studio One, of course. And we're going to catch up with some news, music, and, you know, everything that we can do to ease your soul. It's crazy time for everyone. And one thing is for sure, we need to make sense out of everything. And that's why I decided to collect some news clips from the past to let you see the old pictures. You see, when you start indicating on somebody with one finger, two fingers or more shows to you. So to all those Democrats that pinpoint what the Republicans are doing with the Russians, I'm calling upon you guys to maybe check again and see what is so wrong by talking to the Russian. So let's listen to the first segment.
In the headlines today, Russia has slammed the U.S. Secretary of State's planned meeting with Ukrainian opposition leaders. The Russian Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin has called John Kerry's upcoming meeting, quote, a circus. Moscow's sharp criticism comes as Kerry is set to meet Ukraine's opposition leaders in a show of support for anti-government protests there. The meeting will take place on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference on Saturday. Ukraine's anti-government rallies began after President Yanukovych pulled out of a deal with the EU, which could pave the way for Kiev to join the bloc. The opposition says the Ukrainian leader made the move under Russia's influence. Let's get more now from Julia Dyobova, correspondent with us on the line from Moscow. Julia, we know that Russia itself is accused of interference in Ukraine's affairs, but now a lot of anger from Moscow directed at the U.S. for the same reason. What can you tell us about the reason for this anger?
Well, this comment that you've been talking about is made by Russian Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin, and he has commented on the news of U.S. State Secretary John Kerry's plan to meet with Ukrainian opposition leaders at the weekend. But this meeting is due to take part on the sidelines of the 50th annual Munich Security Conference, which gets underway on Saturday. But John Kerry is due to meet with former boxing champion Vitaly Klitschko, leader of the UDA or Punch Party, and the opposition leader Arseniy Yatsenyuk. They both became prominent opposition leaders of the anti-government protests in Ukraine over the past few months. Well, Dmitry Rogozin left his comments on his Twitter page on Friday. He slammed the news as, quote, circus. Dmitry Rogozin wrote, it's also necessary to involve Verka Sidyuchka in the talk. This was an apparent sarcasm and refers to Ukraine's drag queen pop star, very popular in Russia and Ukraine. And Rogozin continued that his her authoritative opinion should be heard by the White House and taken into account. Well, Russia's President Vladimir Putin has repeatedly warned against foreign interference in Ukraine's worst crisis since its 1991 independence. And this crisis in Ukraine flared in November last year after President Viktor Yanukovych backed out of a key pact with the European Union in favor of closer ties with Moscow. And in Munich, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will be meeting with John Kerry on the sidelines of this conference. And trilateral meetings involving Lavrov, Ban Ki-moon and John Kerry may take place as well.
Julia Lyubova, correspondent on the line from Moscow. Thank you very much, Julia.
All right. And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. We are trying to assess what's all this noise about connection with Russia. Is that something new? Is that something we don't do? Or are we supposed to avoid Russia as the balance of power in the world? Let's listen to the next one.
Crisis in Syria. With plans for a military strike stalled, Secretary of State John Kerry is meeting with the Russian foreign minister in Geneva today to hammer out a deal to get Syria to give up its chemical weapons. ABC's Martha Raddatz is tracking all the overnight developments. And Martha, the secretary wants to drill down and see if this is really a serious proposal.
He sure does, George. This is really the morning the serious negotiations begin. Secretary Kerry right now on the ground in Geneva with his Russian counterpart wants to hear specifics from the Russians how these chemical weapons would be stockpiled, inventoried, and destroyed. And of course, all of that would have to happen in the middle of a raging civil war. A senior official sounding somewhat optimistic this morning, though, George, saying it is doable, although difficult and complicated.
Meantime, Russian President Vladimir Putin taking something of an unusual move, going to the New York Times, speaking directly to the American people with a challenge for President Obama.
Right to the American people and picking apart President Obama's speech this week to keep the pressure on Syria by threatening military strikes. Putin writing, it is alarming that military intervention in internal conflicts in foreign countries has become commonplace for the United States. Is it in America's long-term interest? I doubt it, says Putin.
He feels he's winning right now. Meanwhile, North Korea starting up their nuclear reactors again.
Exactly. In Yongbyon, satellite photos show this plant, which was partially destroyed in 2008, now apparently restarted, which means the North Koreans could start making even more nuclear weapons, George.
Okay, Martha Raddatz, thanks very much.
All right. So we settle on one thing. Russia was instrumental by giving America some kind of relief with the chemical weapon that Syria was handling. Remember, 2013, John Kerry announced to the world that Syria used the chemical weapon. They didn't know what to do. They wanted to send forces to the region. I'm sure I have another clip about that segment. But the Russian stand on and save the day. They actually handled Syrian chemical weapon and in kind of successful way. So when you are successful to warm the relationship and the partnership by establishing some kind of guidelines in the war on terror, what happened after, you know, the president leave? Does it mean that you have to stop talking to them, or who changed the rules in between? And not just this, okay? Once you talk to the Russian while the Democrats are in session, the Republican we're talking to, because it's the crisis that evolved everybody around. And if you prepare for election, sure enough, you will talk to everybody who is involved in the world, in global war and terror. So I see a little, not such a sincere effort to smear Russia and to smear the American presidency right now. And I think that we need to get a grip, you know, okay, you lost the election. Now you want to go with the punches. Don't roll so hard because you might get, you know, on the other side of the mud. It's not so fun. Let's listen to the next one. I'm rolling with it. I want you to understand what I intend to send you, the message of, you know, balance. Think right.
В целом ряде случаев мы можем более эффективно взаимодействовать, чтобы повысить эффективность усилий всего мирового сообщества. Прежде всего это касается борьбы с терроризмом, который сейчас становится.
And we are back. It was Russian. Russian, just to let you listen to some of the people, you know, some of voices from the other side of the globe, because there are millions of people who speak that language. I try to understand why America is so hostile to the old notion of a communication. And sure enough, they like to punch and they like to say that they're going to interfere and they meddle. It's like America does. They just show the world that they can do too. But the fact is, if they succeeded, I don't think so. There are a lot of evidence that they didn't. So what, you know, let's keep on rolling. The next one.
I have no doubt that the combination of the threat of force and the willingness to pursue diplomacy helped to bring us to this moment. But diplomacy requires willing partners. And I want to thank President Putin for his willingness to pick up on the possibility of negotiating an end to Syrian weapons of mass destruction. We have reached a shared assessment of the amount and type of chemical weapons possessed by the Assad regime. And we are committed to the rapid assumption of control by the international community of those weapons. Second, specific timelines. The United States and Russia are committed to the elimination of Syrian chemical weapons in the soonest and safest manner. We agreed that Syria must submit within a week, not in 30 days, but in 1 week, a comprehensive listing, and additional details will be addressed regarding that in the coming days. Third, the unprecedented use of chemical weapons convention procedures is an important component of this framework. We have committed to use extraordinary procedures under the Chemical Weapons Convention for the expeditious destruction and stringent verification of Syrian chemical weapons. Fourth, verification and monitoring. In the interest of accountability, the United States and Russia have agreed that the Syrians must provide the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons and supporting personnel with an immediate and unfettered right to inspect any and all sites in Syria. Fifth, destruction. We have agreed to destroy all chemical weapons, including the possibility of removing weapons for destruction outside of Syria. We have also reached a side agreement on methodology. Fifth, finally, consequences. Sixth, excuse me. Our agreement today strengthens the OPCW, the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons, Executive Council decision to use the Chemical Weapons Convention extraordinary procedures in order to ensure full implementation. It also provides for UN administrative and logistical support to the OPCW for inspections and destruction. In the event of noncompliance, we have committed to impose measures under Chapter 7 within the UN Security Council. Ultimately, perhaps more so than anywhere in the world, actions will matter more than words. In the case of the Assad regime, President Reagan's old adage about trust but verify, doveraj no proveraj, I think is the saying, that is in need of an update. And we have committed here to a standard that says verify and verify. But I also want to be clear about the end game here. If we can join together and make this framework a success and eliminate serious chemical weapons, we would not only save lives, but we would reduce the threat to the region and reinforce an international standard, an international norm. We could also lay the groundwork for further cooperation that is essential to end the bloodshed that has consumed Syria for more than 2 years. What we agreed on here today could conceivably be the first critical concrete step in that direction. The United States and Russia have long agreed that there is no military solution to the conflict in Syria. It has to be political. It has to happen at the negotiating table. And we, together, remain deeply committed to getting there.
Okay, so we together. What part of together the Democrat did not get? It's a little scary to think that they are changing the rules of engagement in a day or two after it's 2013 was long gone. And since then, we still have the negotiation. We had the agreement with Iran, which we all need to enforce. And America cannot enforce it, as you all know. Only the Russians have access to whatever they're doing there. And as we say, you know, keep your friends close and your enemy closer. So get with the plan. Let's go on with life. We have a nation to build, a world to create, and we need to succeed in whatever we're doing. And we have to look at the top because we have a whole young generation, you know, bouncing and kicking in the back of our necks, and we need to get going, all right? So let's get some music, and we'll be back after that.
I met you in the dark, you lit me up. You made me feel as though I wasn't off. We danced the night away, we drank too much. I held your hair back when you were throwing up. Then you smiled over your shoulder for a minute.
And we're back. You know, guys, sometimes in history, there is a moment when you have to reveal your cards. You know, even if you're poker players, there is a game and there is a round to, you know, to be made. And the players in the game, the savvy one, usually keep their cards close and they don't reveal it until there is a card that just gets out of the stack and, you know, it's reveal your card. And today we have a game, not a game, actually, we have a sound bite that talks about the 2003-13 almost war of America in Syria. And we're going to listen to it, then I'm going to tell you about the role I played. Let's listen to that.
And the two just are not similar.
Senator Paul.
Thank you for coming today. It's not often that I get to compliment the president. I can probably count the number of times maybe on one hand. But when I first heard that the president was going to come to Congress, boy, was I pleasantly surprised. I was proud that he was my president. I didn't vote for him, and I still am opposed to him quite a few times. But I was proud that he did this. And I was just about to stand on my feet and clap and give him a standing ovation. And then I heard, well, but if I lose the vote, I'll probably go ahead and do the bombing anyway. And so that does concern me. I want to be proud of the president, but every time I'm just about there, then I get worried that really he doesn't mean it, that he's going to sort of obey the Constitution if he wins. So I heard Secretary Kerry say, if we win, sure. But if we lose, what? I mean, make me proud today, Secretary Kerry. Stand up for us and say, you're going to obey the Constitution, and if we vote you down, which is unlikely, by the way, but if we do, you would go with what the people say through their Congress, and you wouldn't go forward with a war that your Congress votes against. Can you give me a better answer, Secretary Kerry?
I can't give you a different answer than the one I gave you. I don't know what the president's decision is, but I will tell you this. It ought to make you proud because he still has the constitutional authority, and he would be in keeping with the Constitution.
Well, I disagree with you there. I don't believe he has the constitutional authority. I think Congress has this. Madison was very explicit. When he wrote the Federalist Papers, he wrote that history supposes, or the Constitution supposes what history demonstrates, that the executive is the branch most likely to go to war, and therefore the Constitution vested that power in the Congress. It's explicit and runs throughout all of Madison's writings. This power is a congressional power, and it is not an executive power. They didn't say big war, small war. They didn't say boots on the ground, not boots on the ground. They said declare war. Ask the people on the ships launching the missiles whether they're involved with war or not. If we do not say that the Constitution applies, if we do not say explicitly that we will abide by this vote, You're making a joke of us. You're making us into theater. And so we play constitutional theater for the president. If this is real, you will abide by the verdict of Congress. You're probably going to win. Just go ahead and say it's real, and let's have a real debate in this country and not a meaningless debate that in the end you lose and you say, oh, well, we had the authority anyway. We're going to go ahead and go to war anyway. A couple of items.
Senator, I assure you there's nothing meaningless. And there is everything real.
Only if you adhere to what we vote on. Here. Only if our vote makes a difference. Only if our vote is binding is it meaningful.
And I will leave to the man who was elected to be President of the United States the responsibility for telling you what his decision is if and when that moment came. But the president intends to win this vote, and he's not going to make prior announcements.
We've had a lot of discussion about, you know, whether or not we're going to make the world safer with this. Somehow we're going to have less chemical weapons. But I think that's an open question. And I think it's conjecture at best. You can say, oh, well, we think Assad will be less likely to launch chemical weapons after this. We may be able to degrade his capacity somewhat. He's got 1,000 tons. We're going to wipe it out. Most reports I hear say we're not even probably going to directly bomb chemical weapons because of what might happen to the surrounding population. So my guess is he still will have the ability. Most people say Assad acted very illogically. Why would he release chemical weapons on his own people when it brought the anger and enmity of the entire world? So he's already acting irrationally or illogically. Now we're going to deter him and he's going to act in a rational manner. I think it's equally likely that he either does it again or he doesn't do it. I don't think you can say for certain which is better. I don't know that we can say that by attacking them, he's not going to launch another chemical attack. Will the region, I got a few of them, then I'll stop. Will the region be more stable or less stable? We all say we want stability in the Middle East, and stability in the Middle East is a national interest for our country. Will it be more stable or less stable? I frankly think there are equal arguments on both sides of that. Will Israel be more likely to suffer an attack on them, a gas attack or otherwise, or less likely? I think there's a valid argument for saying they'll be more likely to suffer an attack if we do this. Will Russia be more likely or less likely to supply more arms or get more heavily involved in this? I think there's a valid argument that they may become more likely to be involved. Iran, more likely or less likely to be involved with this? If Iran gets involved, more likely or less likely that Israel launches a reprisal attack on Iran? There are all kinds of unknowns that I can't tell you absolutely the answer, and neither can you. But I think there's a reasonable argument that the world may be less stable because of this, and that it may not deter any chemical weapons attack. So what I would ask is, how are we to know? How are we to go home? I haven't had one person come up to me and say they're for this war. Not one person. We get calls by the thousands. Nobody's calling in favor of this war. I didn't meet one. I was home all month. I went to 40 cities. I didn't have one person come up and say, do they all agree it's a horrendous thing? Yes, we all agree that chemical attacks are a horrendous thing, but people are not excited about getting involved. They also don't think it's going to work. And they're skeptical of what will occur with this. But I'd appreciate your response and try to reassure the rest of us, one, that the vote is meaningful and valid, that you'd adhere to it, and also that you're convinced that all of these different items will be better, not worse, by this attack.
Well, Senator, I'd be very happy to do that. Will Israel be more likely to suffer an attack, or will they be safer? Will they be less safe? I can make it crystal clear to you that Israel will be less safe unless the United States takes this action. Iran and Hezbollah are two of the three biggest allies of Assad. And Iran and Hezbollah are the two single biggest enemies of Israel. So if Iran and Hezbollah are advantaged by the United States not curbing Assad's use of chemical weapons, there is a much greater likelihood that at some point down the road, Hezbollah, who has been one of the principal reasons for a change in the situation on the ground, will have access to these weapons of mass destruction. And Israel will for certain be less secure.
But I would also argue that it would be more likely that Hezbollah will attack because of this attack in response.
And Israel feels quite confident of its ability to deal with Hezbollah if they were to do so. You will notice that Israel has on several occasions in the last year seen fit to deal with threats to its security because of what's in Syria, and not once has Assad responded to that to date. I think there are a bunch of things we should talk about in a classified session, but let me just make it very clear to you that, you know, you ask these questions, will this or that be more likely to happen or not likely to happen? If the United States of America doesn't do this, Senator, is it more or less likely that Assad does it again? You want to answer that question?
I don't think it's known. I don't think
is
it's
it more or less likely that he does it again?
You have the attack. I think it's unknown whether it's more
it's
or less
unknown.
Whether you have the attack.
Senator, it's not unknown. If the United States of America doesn't hold him accountable on this with our allies and friends, it's a guarantee Assad will do it again. A guarantee. And I urge you to go to the classified briefing and learn that. Secondly, let me just point out to you that with respect to this question of Americans wanting to go to war, you know, you got three people here who have been to war. You got John McCain who's been to war. There's not one of us who doesn't understand what going to war means, and we don't want to go to war. We don't believe we are going to war in the classic sense of taking American troops and America to war. The president is asking for the authority to do a limited action that will degrade the capacity of a tyrant who has been using chemical weapons to kill his own people.
But I think by doing so, you announce...
It's a limited. It's limited.
By doing so, you announce in advance that your goal is not winning.
But that's not...
And I think the last 50 years of secretaries of defense would say...
Senator,
your goal
when
is not
people
to
are
win,
asked,
you
do you want to go to war in Syria? Of course not. Everybody, 100% of Americans will say no. We say no. We don't want to go to war in Syria either. It's not what we're here to ask. The president is not asking you to go to war. He's not asking you to declare war. He's not asking you to send one American troop to war. He's simply saying we need to take an action that can degrade the capacity of a man who's been willing to kill his own people by breaking a nearly 100-year-old prohibition, and will we stand up and be counted to say we won't do that? That's not, I don't, you know, I just don't consider that going to war in the classic sense of coming to Congress and asking for a declaration of war. And training troops and sending people abroad and putting young Americans in harm's way. That's not what the president is asking for here. General, do you want to speak at all to that?
No, not really, Secretary. Thank you for offering.
I'd pull a rug out from under it.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis, and that time was probably the beginning of September or end of August 2013. By that time, I arrived back to the state after, you know, I went back to Israel when my mother got sick, and I stayed over until she died and passed away. And I took care of my father, situated him in a new apartment, fixing all the stuff and leaving, you know, a few books of mine, but not on my library that I should have. And I wrapped up my stuff and I went like a good American back to South Carolina. I arrived to South Carolina August 1st, 2013. I don't know why I had the itch to come, but I was visiting on the ground in Israel with some, you know, in Israel there are a million Russians, and the Russians are Jewish descent, of course, and they're living there here and working hard, and they're good people. They like music, they like art, and, you know, dancing, sport. It's a good addition to Israel level of cultural idea. And in one of those meetings that I was invited to, I was invited to talk, to listen to a man that spoke about Russia. He was sick then, so he was talking about the relationship he has with some official in Russia, and was listening to him. And then he was telling me, telling the group, that, you know, there are a few naval forces around our area, and there is, you know, a carrier, a Russian carrier that was positioned near Israel. So I was saying, what do you mean by that? He said, well, they position it. And by the time I left, there were three of them, they said, powerful. I'm not sure what kind of power it was, but it was really strong in my mind that when I came back to America, I was just about to fix my bag, my belonging. I got my furniture bags, and, you know, it took a while because they're coming from the Middle East. What they were thinking, like, what we are, you know, have inside. And, you know, it's all, for me, it's all books and furniture most of the time. And you get, I get my furniture going, And I'm sitting in front of the TV to listen to, of course, C-SPAN. What else? I'm hooked on politics. And Secretary Kerry is sitting in front and, you know, a committee, and he's talking about the fact that they need to go to war in Syria. And I'm standing up and I'm saying, what do you mean there's a war in Syria? They're like the Russians' boat there, the shuttle. Are you crazy out of your mind? I'm screaming back to the TV. On the same evening, the same afternoon, actually, I'm getting an email from CPAC, the Christian PAC in Washington. And they invited me to a conference session. I said, oh, God, thank you. I can actually listen to what they have in mind, because I want to see what America is going to war now. I just came back from there. There are Russian forces. Are they nuts? So I'm listening to, I'm getting into this conference call of CPAC, like I'm invited tonight. There is another one that I'm invited, but it's too late for me. I'm with Israeli time here. So I'm listening the conference on the conference call, and Richard Hellman, which is the president of CPAC, is talking so nicely to me, and said, hey, it's so good to hear you, and you're back, everything is well. And then, before I know it, this conference call is become talks about me, what I know, what's the situation in the region, what I feel. And, of course, you know, you never can keep me quiet if you give me the microphone. So, sure enough, I get to run this conference. And I said something like that. I need time. We need time, because we need to take time. Before you send forces to American forces to arm way, you need time. You need to really assess what's going on. And sure enough, the next day, by magic, the president is calling to send it back to Congress. And I'm saying that's great, because in Congress, we have the Republican Party. I'm making a phone call to the Republican headquarters the next day. I said, hey, Rick. Rick was then in charge of the Republican GOP committee, I guess. And Rick was an old friend of mine. He used to work on a very, very important presidential race before, which we lost, but it's okay. And Rick was talking to me, and I said, hey, guys, you cannot go to war. There are the Russians here, and they're going to attack you. You cannot do that. And sure enough, all the Republican was in cahoots. You know, they knew the risk, and they knew it's not the safe. When you get an alert, you don't go. So arriving to Congress, the Democrats weren't sure what's going on, because they sure enough were wanted to go to stop the attack, chemical attack on Syrian. But I knew the risk the American will take, and I didn't want to risk the whole area blowing out of proportion. And Israel is about to have Rosh Hashanah, you know, the new year. So I knew it's explosive. You don't touch, you don't even put, a match in that crazy place. So they're going to Congress, and sure enough, the Republican, a whole, I don't know what, on the same line. They knew exactly what's going on, and they said no. So the president called upon Netanyahu, and he said to him, tell APAC, like they are his own back pocket, to go to Congress and get me the vote. And I'm hearing, what do you mean you tell APAC? You can't tell APAC nothing. APAC is, you know, it's a lobby. It's doing their job. They don't. First of all, they don't do that. And second, what this Israeli prime minister to get involved in this? So I'm sending a message to my friends in the Knesset. I said, tell Netanyahu to go and look for his friends, because the lobby is not his property. And I'm sending him, okay, because I got mad. You don't ask me to do anything, you know, especially when you have a balance of power like this. Sure enough, APAC knew that there is no enough votes. And they were like in a very bad condition, because APAC is a winner. and they always have to win. And they didn't have, it wasn't their, you know, legislative, so they weren't even supposed to collect any votes. But sure enough, they needed to make some kind of balance. So I came up with an idea. Okay, why don't you let the Russian handle that chemical weapon? Drop it on the Russians. And they say, so we talk and they say, are you kidding me? Say, yeah, that's the only thing, you know, to do. You know, the Americans are not coming, right? So ask them, ask the Russian. Sure enough, Kerry asked the Russian and they made this agreement. And Russian, you know, came to term and did their stuff. And everything was good. Nobody went to war. You have politics that did their job. Politician who acted up properly. Everybody was happy. And this is the role of politics. You need to talk things over and make it happen. But now the fact is 2017 and the war in Syria is still happening. It means that after they evacuate all those chemical weapons, they stopped doing. And sure enough, I had to move back to Israel to go and take care of my father then. 2014, and that's it. And I'm here, and thank God I got this radio show so I can talk to you. But well, as far as I'm concerned, I cannot, you know, be in touch on a daily basis. Of course, I love my friends and I miss them, but the time frame does not permit. But the thing about it is, there is a situation that a little patient, little understanding of the condition, and maybe just less ego can make a difference. And in that 2013, when America did not go to war, I'm telling you, that was the plan of my book. So I hope to write it one day. Okay, that's it. Let's listen to some music and we'll be back.
Upon a star makes no difference.
When you wish upon a star, you know, remember that Disneyland, and we know that there is a new movie, you know, the Beauty and the Beast, that was just released in Hollywood. And what happened is we have a new version of it. And, you know, I love Disneyland. I love Disney movies. And I love the fact that they are innocuous. It means that they don't hurt. They don't make you think about bad things. They don't make you relate. But all of a sudden, they decide to interfere with our social condition and put their two pennies in the crowd. I'm telling you, if there is anything that I don't like to promote to kids, is sexuality. Because I guess we have enough, you know, promiscuous stuff. And Disney coming up and playing that role, you know what? I don't like that. And I didn't like even the introduction, and the opening was outrageous. Okay? Don't like it. So, boo-boo, that's it. Anyway, let's go to our next segment. Let's listen to what I picked for you.
Should there be a special prosecutor? Daryl Issa has called for a special prosecutor to look into this.
Right, and I guess my question would be, a special prosecutor for what?
Look into the Russia connection.
And here's my
he was part of the campaign. Sessions was part of the campaign.
I understand, but here's my question, Jonathan. We have now for 6 months heard story after story come out about unnamed sources say the same thing over and over again, and nothing's come of it. Right? We've heard the same people, the same anecdotes, and we've heard reports over and over again. And as Chairman Nunes very clear today, he has seen nothing that corroborates that. So at what point you've got to ask yourself, what are you investigating.
Well, Russian interference. I mean, beyond
the
protests.
And I think that both the House and the Senate have looked at it. You know as well as I do that the intelligence community has looked at it as well. There's a big difference. I think that Russia's involvement in activity has been investigated up and down. So the question becomes, at some point, if there's nothing to further investigate, what are you asking people to investigate? I mean, Chairman Nunes spoke very clearly today when asked over and over and over again about all of this and said that he has seen nothing that leads him to believe that there's there. The president has spoken forcefully time and time again that he has no interest in Russia. He hasn't talked to people in Russia in years. And yet you keep asking, and I say you collectively, to try to find something that seemingly at least the reporting that I'm seeing in you know, different organizations suggests that there's nothing new that's being reported. It's the same stuff over and over again that we've heard for literally 6 months. And so the question becomes, at some point, what do you need to further investigate if there is nothing that has come out?
Well, and do you now categorically deny there were no contacts between the Russians and anybody on the campaign?
I guess my question is,
what the investigation would look at.
Right, and I guess my point is that you've had the intelligence community look at Russia's involvement in the election. You've had the House and the Senate both do the same. And so what I'm trying to ascertain is, at what point, how many people have to say that there's nothing there before you realize there's nothing there? I can't say unequivocally. All I'm saying is the people who've done the investigating about Russia overall and its activities in the United States, specifically now with respect to our election, haven't provided anything that lead me to believe or should leave you to believe. And I continue to see reports coming from different media sources that are saying, you know, when they checked in with law enforcement or intelligence community sources, there's nothing more than has been previously reported over and over again. So at some point, you do have to ask yourself, what are you actually looking for? How many times do you have to come to the same conclusion before you take the answer? And that's what I would, Mara. Sean,
going on? I guess it's ended. Okay. Do you get it? There was nothing there. It sounds like the soundbite of Benjamin Netanyahu. There is nothing there, and you will find nothing there. And they've been looking for years, and nothing was there. So, I don't know. It's like the ghost chasing of the Democrats. The left are, you know, are incredible with conspiracy theory. That's why they're so good in culture, in theater and drama. They're incredible in drama. That's why Hollywood is full with lefties, because they love the drama and they invent it again and again. If they cannot find it, they'll make it happen. So this drama should be finished because we have other stuff to take care of. Now, Trump administration and Congress seek to slash United Nations funding. Thank God. Hallelujah. It's about time we close that chapter on the worst organization in the world. Well, that after we close the World Trade Organization, which is non-existent. Per se, because the world economy does not go through them. So what the use of that organization? Anyway, we are back talking about how incredible the Democrats are to investigate any connection with the Russian when they had all kind of relationship that they set the button on it with the Clinton red button, remember? They wanted to create a new relationship, and sure enough, and now anybody who spoke to Russian is apparently not going according to the rules of engagement. It's crazy because nobody changed the rules. The world is still rotating. The balance of power in the world is still between Russia and America, and now we have China. And the Iranian just trying a new missile, and they said successfully. Anybody is awake to that notion? Or everybody is following what the latest obsession is doing? And having said that, I know that there is a new executive order about the immigration. You see, he's going to clean that mess. It doesn't matter how long it's going to take, but somebody has to do the job. But let me tell you something about a good leader. When you let him work, he can perform for you, can do stuff that you need to be, you know, to be done. Stop jeopardizing him. Stop sabotaging everything he does. It's really become nuisance. And as the world is watching, because he's the best show in town, remember? And Hollywood could not manufacture a better show than what he performed for the world. And everybody's looking, and you're beating him up. You're not giving him slack, and it's annoying. And as an American, Israeli, of course, I can tell you that is, you are actually messing up with his spark. So if you want to actually make some good business out of this new president, you shape up, be beautiful as you are, polish your fantastic smile, America, and go back to work. You have a new leader. Let him work. And for all of you guys that want to visit Israel, because his grandson loves Israel and is right, Israel is amazing, I invite you all to visit, because this year we have 50 years of liberation of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is the religious site of all the world to come and pray before God. And having her free is awesome, because you, my friend, Jewish friends, Christian friends, the Muslim also, and anybody else can come and join forces and actually pray the same site. You know, it's not directly the same site, but, you know, it's a corridor. You know, you got all religion together, all three religions together in the same quarter. And it's amazing. So it's 50 years of that celebration. I wish we had a new stamp, if our communication minister had the time to do, but it was the prime minister. So I don't see any stamp for Jerusalem, which is sad. I don't see any coin for Jerusalem, which is even worse. I don't see any tie in the Knesset that celebrate Jerusalem. As a businesswoman, I see so many opportunity for good businesses, but they don't. They don't care enough to love Jerusalem. But this weekend, on Friday, actually, I'm invited by the mayor to have a little tour around Jerusalem, and I'm going to tell him that I want him to give us the opportunity to celebrate this 50 years anniversary. And it's 100 years in November of the Balfour Declaration, that declaration that gives back Palestine as the homeland of the Jewish people, because it's the biblical connection, no matter of the name that the Roman called her. And it's a new time to start deciding what we're going to do. And on top of everything, on top of that we have this, and I have this comment tomorrow, probably I'll be in the Knesset, but I've been elected yesterday to the committee of the newcomers from Italy, because I grew up in Italy, as you know. So I'm also on that committee because I speak Italian, and you know, I guess that they had nobody else. Okay. So I put another thing on my volunteer list for you, world, to come together and start making sense out of it. And I hope that we'll have a good business so we can fund it, because the city of Israel does not fund nothing. It's actually lacking the medical condition of some oncologic department in Jerusalem. Is really in bad shape for the children. And it's really sad, because yesterday all oncologic doctors from the hospital, I'm not sure which one they don't want to mention, but they walk on, all the department doctor walk on, because they had to close the kids department of, you know, cancer sick, and put it in the old people where you treat adult. So the doctor was so outraged that they quit the job. So if you're talking about war, terrorism, we struggle with everybody, everyday communication. We have not enough hospitals here on the grounds and not enough department for children. And forget the elderly, how they're treated. So a lot to do, a lot of work to do. And I'm still calling on America to put a good university here, because American university deserve to be in Israel, and it's outrageous that we don't have yet one. And I say, and I'll say it again, I'll do everything in my power to get some government cooperation here to help America situate this, if somebody will pick the glove and do that. All right, guys, I love you all. I want to remind you that there is a God, and it's not us. Be good. Be good to yourself. Be good to your children. And be good to the world, because you don't know how much time you have. And please, please be careful when you drive. And stop drinking. We need to be all sober, okay? We need really to be on our best act to make sure we get this, we seize the moment and make it happen. And for my little child that is someplace there, having fun without me, of course, please be careful. I love you all. I love you with all my heart. I bless you and I pray for you. God bless you all. Ciao, ciao.